And it is that time of year once again. This is one of my favorite shows to do every year. It's our annual holiday cooking show where we spend an hour just kind of talking about food and family and celebrations of the season and all that kind of fun stuff. And it's also a really fun hour, hopefully to get you involved in the conversation as well. Give us a call. 283-8414 is the number. Give us a call throughout the hour if you have recipe ideas, fun family holiday stories, or just general thoughts, maybe how to keep things local here on the Kenai Peninsula as we eat our way through the holidays. It's kind of getting to be that time of year. And so happy to have with us in the studio this morning a couple of folks who are spend a lot of time around food and in the food world and in the food business. Maya Wilson is with us from, she's the head chef at Addy Camp, of course. And Maya, thanks so much for being back this year.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
And Joe Spady is with us also, and the owner and proprietor of Three Peaks Mercantile in Soldotna. Joe, thanks so much for making time. I know you're both so busy this time of year, but thanks so much.
Excited to be here.
Very good. And just to get started on the just the general topics of food, I guess, I wanted to sort of start by looking back and ask you guys, you know, we've already been through one of these big parts, one of these big celebrations that most of us partake in the Thanksgiving meal. And did anybody have any interesting new ideas, recipes, or try something out new, or major disasters for Thanksgiving? Anything fun? Or do you use Thanksgiving to try out stuff for Christmas? I don't know. A lot of people use it as a tryout meal or even do a Friendsgiving in addition to Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, this year I tried a pomegranate glaze on the turkey instead of my traditional cranberry chutney that I always make, and it turned out great, but I definitely got a comment that I missed the cranberry chutney. So, so cranberry chutney, it will be again next
year. That's the winner.
Yeah,
that's so fun. I love those things. You know, it always reminds me, you know, of you know, the notes in mom's cookbook growing up sort of thing. And this was a winner.
Yes.
This was not a winner. We had to add this, a dash of that. And yeah, keeper, not a keeper, never again is always.
Definitely.
And how about you, Joe? What are some I guess, just basics? I want to go through sort of the basics. What are some things that are just on the table every year when it comes to this time of year?
Oh, gosh. I just love, like, treats. I love Christmas cookies. I love Chex Mix and things like that. Like, my aunt makes the best Chex Mix in the world, and so I always use her recipe and just something to always shove into my face all the time. Something worth shoving in your face.
Right. And so is that stuff, because what I've found is I've gotten older and you keep some of these things with you, but I've sort of, you know, the stuff that I remember and the aromas and the smells and the flavors, you sort of start putting your own spin on it, or you learn maybe some different techniques to do things, and those sorts of things change over time. Is there stuff maybe that you guys have had since childhood that has changed a little bit? I mean, turkey, and then we grow up into turkey with a chutney glaze and those sorts of things. But are there any, like, staples entire lifetime, but they've grown a little bit with you?
Yeah, for me, stuffing has to happen.
Yes.
I mean, 100% has to happen. If it's not on the table, it's just not Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I'm happy to have it Christmas too, honestly. But it definitely evolves over time where it's like, oh, you put sausage and apples, or maybe you do chorizo and cilantro.
Uh-huh.
And so you can change it up. And, you know, I've had it with oysters in it before, that kind of New Orleans version.
Right, yeah.
And as long as there's stuffing happening.
That's the big one. So do we need to, I always feel like it's worth clarifying, and maybe this is just me, the stuffing and dressing thing. Mm. If it's in the bird, right, it's stuffing. Is
right.
That how this goes? And if it's on the side, it's dressing?
That's the rule that I go by.
Okay, all
I
right.
I also was just doing research. It's also like a northern southern thing.
Oh, really?
Oh,
okay.
Because some dressings are stuffed as
right.
well. And a lot of stuffings are not stuffed as well. But I was just did a whole, deep research as I get a thought in my brain and I will go into the deep webs of food interviews and
stuffing deep dive.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I screwed mine up for Thanksgiving this year, and I had been going in this direction. So, you know, the one that I always had was very normal and traditional: dried breadcrumbs, celery, onions, chicken stock, an egg, and pretty much that's it. And that's like, there's nothing wrong with that. And then, I started, playing around with a little bit of sausage, and then we'll add apples, and it started getting sweeter. And I found a couple of years ago, I tried Hawaiian sweetbread, Hawaiian sweetbread, and that really worked. This year, though, and I think it had something to do with, I just don't keep a lot of store-bought sliced bread at home anymore, and they didn't have the genuine article King's Hawaiian Sweet Bread. I don't know if we're supposed to drop names. Who cares? Had to get the chain brand of it. And it was like too sweet and too buttery even for dressing. So that was the big mistake. I guess you get what you pay for when it comes to sliced sweet breads. I don't know. Maybe that's one of those that's those things that keep that local. And you can have a little bit more control over it.
Yeah, I think one of the best stuffings I've ever had is years ago when I was working at Odie's. Literally, end of the day, we were closed for the weekend. I went and grabbed all of our bread ends, and it was just a hodgepodge of the honey wheat and the health nut and the jalapeno cheddar all just mixed in.
Yeah.
And it was so good. Like, I'm really sad I didn't make that this year. Actually, I probably will go make that now that we're talking about it.
I was going to say, at the holidays, I bet they could make a killing just selling those.
Seriously.
Those bread ends for once. Yeah. 283-8414 is the number. If you'd like to hop in on the conversation, it's our annual cooking show here on KDLL, joined with Maya Wilson and Joe Spady. Joe, as we were talking before the show, you know, one of the things that I was really happy you had some time and could join us, because part of your business and what you do is bring gatherings of people together and in different spots and throw sort of dinner parties. And when we get together for the holidays with friends and family and everybody else, that's sort of what it is. And maybe, you know, you could talk a little bit about sort of the mechanics of trying to organize something like that. Maybe somebody's going to throw a big party at their house for the first time this year. They've never done something like that. What kind of planning goes into that sort of thing? And what are the considerations and what are you trying to pull off?
I mean, you just want to have a good time. You kind of have to a lot of it's just deconstruction. Think about any party that you've gone to and really enjoyed. And a lot of it's just like a good spread of nosh right upon arrival, easy access. Like, I get in like sometimes heavy party situations a little anxious that I don't want to necessarily have to like go, where are the drinks? Or, can I go into the fridge? Like, just having that aspect of everything's laid out, everything's ready and straightforward and just kind of well-planned that everything is accessible.
Like kind of a floor plan or a roadmap of
how. As soon as you walk in, like with our supper clubs, we've kind of gotten the place that we try to, We've kind of had wins and losses of trying to, like, as soon as you walk in, there's, like, a flow. You kind of know where to go, where to socialize. Sometimes it just people walk in. Sometimes we'll grab a glass of wine and sit down. And then they have to sit at the table for a half hour until we serve dinner. And we really try to if you can achieve a place where people are walking around and talking and interacting, that really is what makes such a good party. And that's really what you're going for. At one point, I literally just kicked a friend off the table. I was like, just go, you're ruining it for me. which was fine. But honestly, like, things like that really can help push a party forward and keep everyone having a good time.
I guess giving people something sort of to do besides just be there. I mean, being there together, we would hope, is the reason everybody's there in the first place. But beyond that, you know, yes, there's space to mill about and mm-hmm. there's, you know, I think, you know, as you said, stuff to nosh on and mm-hmm. people know what they can and can't do off the top of the, you know, just kind of getting out of the gates a little bit. What's and this is a good one for both of you, when you're thinking about doing a big dish, so, I guess a trick that I've learned slowly over the years is that you can prepare ahead of time. You can work ahead of time. It doesn't have to start the day of at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Right. Thinking about all of these things from the approach of, you know, haven't done this before or haven't done this too many times. What are some things that you guys like to work ahead of time, or that maybe even get better ahead of time? Because some things are, there's that consideration too.
Right. Well, definitely always start with prepping your veg ahead of time. You know, you can cut all your celery, all your onions, all your carrots, all that stuff ahead and have it in the fridge just ready to go. And that'll save you hours of prep time on the actual day that you can be spending enjoying your eggnog and your cookies and your family and the music and everything else.
And the eggnog.
And the eggnog again. Let's throw that in, the boozy eggnog. But so definitely the veg and any kind of dressings, things like that, where if you're gonna have a nice green salad, you can prep your dressings ahead, your sauces, But things like gravy, mashed potatoes, stuff like that needs to be done like moments before.
Yeah. And that's such a big part of it is sort of choreographing this dance and timing everything out. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's and even for folks who do a lot of cooking, if you know, making six dishes at one time or more in a lot of cases, there's a huge dance to be done there. Do you find yourselves planning out, you know, weeks or days in advance? You know, I'm going to have this at this time and this at that time, and sort of the order of things. Is that just how you have to do it?
That is the way you have to do it. That's not the way I always do it. I have not been fully successful in that area, but it is the way it should be done. And I have done it on occasion. Like, it really does pay off if you're able to, like, kind of plan out your week that week and figure out, like, and then really, like, hour by hour, figure out what your day is going to look like, and then it really does make the day much more enjoyable.
This is where, for the two of you, if you really are planning like a big meal for family and around the holidays, you're doing this all the time, the two of you. This is just like bringing work home for an extra day, I suppose, almost, whether we like to or not.
Yeah, no, it's hard to switch off that chef switch in your brain.
Because even when you go home, we're still eating, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Mm.
Yes, I think my family would appreciate more of my chef energy at home, to be honest. They have really been missing out. And I think that, so holidays are a good time for me because the restaurant's closed. I can be at home and, you know, I can make rolls and have the dough rising in the morning and make a nice breakfast. And that's a whole other category of holiday food is what are you eating for breakfast before you do all this other cooking.
Mm-hmm. I want to, you know what, let's just get right into that. Holiday breakfast, when I was growing up, it was always monkey bread. Mm. It was always the little dough balls covered mm-hmm. in brown sugar, and it all caramelizes into a nice caramel sauce, and you turn it out and it pops out and great with a glass of milk and just enough to hold you over and get you through the morning until the big one. Those were always great. What were, did you have, was breakfast more of a main event in and of itself for you guys growing up, or, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. It's a big deal.
What was on the table?
It was pretty standard. We had really good, like breakfast casserole, like, some kind of pastry. Sometimes my dad would make his famous pancakes. Like,
yeah,
it really did have a bit of variety, but it was like a big sit down, like mom's china,
everybody
fancy
up.
Red goblets down for Christmas every year. And it was kind of even sometimes the more featured meal, like as in our house. So sometimes we'd go out to other friends' houses for lunch or dinner for like the big meal. And sometimes we'd bring things or mom would make a pie or something. But in our actual house, breakfast was like, that was Christmas. We got to do stockings beforehand, but everything else had to wait until after we breakfast. So everyone would jump in and make sure that those breakfast came out fast because we wanted to get to presents.
Right.
I know a lot of people do cinnamon rolls on Christmas morning.
Sure.
Yeah. So do that. And then I would echo the breakfast casserole. I actually heard the owner of the restaurant, Henry, was telling me just recently about this grits casserole that he makes every year.
Yes.
For Christmas morning, I think. Mm-hmm. And I had never heard of grits casserole before. So this is stuck in my brain. I'm just fascinated by this grits casserole.
What is it?
I think it has some sausage in it. And I don't know the whole thing, and I haven't tried it.
Yeah.
But I've
heard about it as well.
So, yeah, famous grits casserole. There you go, Henry.
All right. Well, we're going to have to keep an eye out. Maybe that'll pop up on the menu at some point. Who knows?
You just never know.
This might be the year.
Well, and it's so funny, too, because, again, you know, with these annual sort of traditions and these annual gatherings. This is, you mentioned my dad makes this, and this is where a person's like special dish always comes out. And that's what, and I love focusing on those because those are the ones that, again, if it was a little less good, you might make it more times throughout the year, but it's so good. You have to kind of save it a little bit, or it's a lot of work or those sorts of things. I guess I don't mind ever the prep work. I find, because I don't do it for a living, maybe that's part of it. I don't mind the prep work so much, and especially as I have learned to sort of divvy that up a little bit in the days leading up to, you can sort of enjoy that process, the whole process, a little bit more and think about it a little bit more and those sorts of things. If you're thinking about getting in on the conversation, the number is 283-8414. Again, 283-8414. Give us your recipe ideas or family traditions, things that you enjoy about the holidays, around the holidays. That's what we're talking about this morning here on the Kenai Conversation with Maya Wilson and Joe Spady. We talked about, you know, as we sort of bring the meal together, you mentioned mashed potatoes as being one of those things. Something that I've been wanting to kind of experiment around with a little bit, because for the first time, I've started recently running into people who aren't as much into mashed potatoes as I am. Mm. I love mashed potatoes. I know, right?
Who is this?
I don't know why. You know, we have people in our lives, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. But I've wanted to experiment around, and this would be a good way, I think, to sort of integrate more local things into these meals that we do deeper into the year when it's a bit harder to get local stuff. More root vegetable stuff beyond just mashed potatoes, so like adding parsnips or turnips and things like that. Have you worked with those sorts of root vegetable kind of mashes and mixes and purees? Is that a direction we could go in and kind of experiment with a little bit?
Definitely. A parsnip puree is awesome. We've served it at the restaurant before, and that's a great way to go. Another thing you could do is like a cauliflower mash. That's not a root vegetable, but it's along the same lines of kind of a mash substitute where you wanted to do some, like, get more produce into your meal.
Even blends. Like, I love, like, just working cauliflower into my mashed potatoes just to have, not only just healthier, but also just more flavor, just bringing more depth and complexity.
That's something, the cauliflower as a substitute for just sort of starches in general seems to be a trend that's taking off. I've messed around with a little bit and was really pleasantly surprised at how well it works, like as a substitute for rice in a lot of dishes, or cauliflower mac and cheese you can't go wrong. I think you might take away some of the health benefits of pasta versus cauliflower with all the cheese and bacon, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, and cauliflower pizza crust, I think, is a thing.
Oh, that's
That's right. Yeah.
I've never done that.
I want to try that one too. Is it Mark Twain? Cauliflower is just cabbage with a college education, I believe, is how that one goes.
That sounds like Mark Twain. That
a thing like parsnips, it brings such a different, brings kind of a sharpness and a lightness to mashed potatoes. Is that something that you're going to dress then with like normal gravy, or do you then, you know, as those ingredients change, how do you top that? Or, you know, do you top it at all? Does it just need maybe just a sprinkling of fresh herbs and some butter? What do you do?
I mean, all of the above, gravy, butter, fresh herbs. I'm all about all of that.
It really depends on what you're going for. Like, I mean, if you were trying to really full on replace it, mashed potatoes, then you're going to want like something straightforward and gravy and traditional.
Yeah.
But I mean, with either a mashed potato substitute or just mashed potatoes, get creative, do whatever you would like. Last week I made like a garlic cheddar mash just because I didn't want to mess with gravy in the restaurant, and they were so good and they did not need gravy, and that would have been just as good, that concept, with cauliflower or any other root vegetable.
Yeah.
My grill guy, Kyle, has been raving about his mom's stuffed potatoes that they do every year over the holidays. I think it's like a twice baked.
Yeah.
And I don't know what all she puts in there, but it's, you know, it's like local legend.
Yeah. So a twice baked, how do you bake a potato twice?
So you bake a potato and then you take the filling out and then you put all kinds of goodies in there, like bacon or cheese or green onions or sour cream. And then you put it back in the potato and you bake it again until it's all crispy. Being golden and yummy, and it's kind of almost like a scalloped potato, but in its own holder,
and it stays right in the skin, and like a little potato boat,
you get a whole big potato on your plate,
and just one potato, but it looks really good, right?
Yeah.
That's with gravy. Is it a must that we use meat drippings and pans and, you know, fonds from the pan and that sort of thing? Or are you guys just whipping something up quick sort of on the side?
Oh, well, I mean, pan drippings are going to be the big winner.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely different ways to do gravy. I mean, if you have pan drippings and you're serving for a group that can eat meat, go that route. There's definitely lots of delicious ways to make good gravies without them.
Yeah.
But, oh gosh, those pan drippings.
Oh, yeah. I'm on the pan dripping train all the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, choo-choo, let's go.
Because, like, this is, I think, maybe sort of a guilty pleasure for me, is I don't have a hard stance against the sort of concentrated bouillon paste that comes out sort of almost like electric yellow for chicken stock replacement sort of thing. But it makes this super fast, super intensely flavored gravy. And it feels like kind of cheating, but it's also fast and really good. And so are those, I feel like those are some of the maybe shortcuts that are out there a little bit, but I don't know. Those are, again, those are sort of personal too. Does this have to be a part of it, or does this have to be sort of an afterthought?
Right. Well, and a lot of people may have grown up with grandma's gravy coming from a can or from a package, and that is the gravy that they've come to expect.
Cranberry sauce.
Yeah, cranberry sauce from a can. Uh-huh. Or your, like, green bean casserole. Those kind of things that just have to be there because they've always been there. Or, you know, sweet potatoes with marshmallows on top, those classics. And it's like, hey, grandma made that, and I want that. And so sometimes pan drippings isn't the way to go if what you've come to expect is something else.
Yeah. I never use sweet potatoes. Hmm. And I don't really know why. I don't have a particularly big sweet tooth, but that doesn't mean I don't like sweet potatoes. Maybe you can, I don't know, or if you have any like winning recipes, sell me on some sweet potatoes. What do I do with those?
Growing up, I didn't like sweet potatoes. I think it was the marshmallow and it was just too sweet. And it,
mapley.
It confused me why it was sitting next to my mashed potatoes and green bean casserole. I think had it been served as a dessert, I maybe would have had a different perspective, but I think it confused me and I didn't care for it. And I've come to love like good candied sweet potatoes, but I think one of my favorite is if you lean savory with it and give it a good balance. Like I love like making like almost like a scalloped sweet potato with like a sage cream sauce, gorgonzola, and pecans.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite dishes.
Are you using anything to thicken that sauce or just reduced cream and...
I've experimented a few different ways. Yeah. If I can just do a good reduced cream, that really is the best way without making it too saucy. It just makes all those ingredients.
That's, I think, one of the underrated sort of, I don't know, techniques, recipes, whatever you want to call it, is just simply reduced cream. Mm. And it thickens up so nice and is terrible for you and so delicious.
Yeah. And we could lean all the way the sweet direction and go with like a maple sweet potato pie. Mm-hmm. And then instead of a pumpkin pie, you have a sweet potato pie, which is just as easy to make. And you throw the sweet, you cook your sweet potato, throw it in the blender with your eggs and your cream and your maple syrup, and then top it with some pecans or like a meringue or whipped cream. And it's delicious.
There's another great use for that cream that we brought to the party is just to make our own homemade whipped cream, which is always fantastic. It'd be fantastic to hear from you this hour on the Kenai Conversation. 283-8414 is the number. We're talking all about holiday meal prep, holiday cooking, family traditions, all those fun sorts of things as we head into the holiday season here. And we're joined with Chef Maya Wilson, Chef Joe Spady, two local food scene. I don't know. How would you describe yourselves in the local food scene? There is a local food scene. It's growing all the time. You two are most certainly a part of it.
I'm a legend.
I think so. It's happening. It's happening.
That so much, Joe. Yeah, you're, I'm no one.
Makes mine sound like a lie now. Gosh.
No, that was awesome.
You should do each marketing for one another. This is how this
absolutely,
needs to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maya is an incredible voice of food in the area. I first heard about Maya when I was visiting before I'd moved back home. Someone showed me, like, you have to follow this Instagram. This woman is amazing. And so I started following it, and then I think we started commenting on each other's things. And then one day up at Whistle Hill when I was working at 602, Maya came over and introduced herself to me, where she just said hello. And I was like, hi, how are you? Nice to see you. As I tried to figure out who this person was. And then finally she introduced herself, and I got so starstruck because she's so talented. And I was kind of overwhelmed by all of her incredible recipes and her reputation and the fact that she was just such a perfect fit for Eddie Camp. And getting to see her really bring everything that she was doing on the page to our town has been so exciting.
Oh my goodness. Joe, you're making me tear up.
Yes.
What
please
are you
please
doing?
Respond to all of that.
Oh, I love this guy. Okay. So Joe, he is just this beacon of warmth on the peninsula. Like, people are just drawn to this guy, and he's so good with people. I'm the type of person who wants to hide in the kitchen and, you know, like, let me be back there with my food in my, like, safe space. And he's out there just, like, hitting the pavement with the people. And that's something I really admire about Joe that he's so good at, is that he has this way of welcoming people in, and with both his food, but also like who he is as a person. And he's so talented, ultra uber creative. I honestly don't know how he's coming up with so many different meal and dish ideas, just constantly all the time putting out new menus, new food. And, you know, I've got a menu that changes seasonally, and that's enough for me. But Joe has new menus like every day. And so it's just really incredible to me the level of creativity that he has. And but mostly his commitment to this community and its people.
Well, and to stay on the sort of the social media theme a little bit, one of the things that I've noticed following Instagram, Three Peaks Media or Three Peaks Mercantile on Instagram, you'll find there are sort of variations on themes that you do. Bread pudding is one that you have a lot of variations on this theme. Maybe talk a little bit about that, and maybe you have some good ideas if people want to try some of your bread pudding recipes.
Absolutely. I'm not like I kind of fell into bread puddings purely because we were making so much bread in the beginning of the summer.
What do I do with all this?
Yes, especially when we were doing pop-up restaurants, like I would make a ton of bread for grilled cheese or whatever we were making that week. And some weeks I would sell out of everything and I'd be done. And then some weeks I'd be like, I have 7 loaves of bread. and so it was just kind of a necessity just to, what can I do with this? And so I started testing recipes to find a good bread pudding. At that point, I just started mixing in new things, and it really, it was very exciting to really figure out what makes a really good bread pudding. Like, I do a bourbon pecan one that's super good. I did that last week, and someone bought a big pan of it for her Christmas party, and it went really well. I do a pumpkin one, and I think one of my favorites, a lot of it's like, what do I have left over at the end of the day?
Right.
And I did a strawberry parmesan one sometime during the summer, and it was outrageously good. It kind of had this cheesecake, complex cheesecake vibe to the bread pudding. So I think it's just be confident in like flavor profiles that you personally like. Just throw it into your batter of bread pudding, and it really just has the potential to be wonderful. Not always. There are moments I'm like, oh, nope, we're not selling this.
There's so much of this is good, that is good, this and that should be good. And generally, that tends to work out pretty well. And sometimes a lot can work out unexpectedly well. Other times, unexpectedly, not so well. So those are things to always keep in mind. Did you have any, as you were experimenting with some of these, because these, as Maya mentioned, these pop up on your menu all the time. Did you have any ones that were just like, total failures?
I'm trying to think of a bread pudding.
It's kind of hard to like totally fail at it and make it inedible. But
I made like a I really like working with cereals as well. So I used like a Fruity Pebbles, made like a Fruity Pebbles citrus pie, and I was very excited, and it looked beautiful. And a lot of times, first thing in the morning, I'll take out a slice, and that will be breakfast, and it'll just be my test slice, because it'll be a recipe test. And that whole pie ended up in the garbage.
Yeah.
It was so bitter and horrible. I'm not sure exactly what I did, but it was pure garbage. And so you never know. And also being willing to throw away that garbage. Like, don't be like, it's okay.
Don't be a hero.
Just, no. Go do something. Go eat something good. Don't eat bad food. Like, hold your standards high.
Some of, like, for myself, that's just, unless it's charred black and inedible, I'm forcing myself to get you. This is the lesson you're going to learn from this experiment. That's how that works. Well, we're to the bottom of the hour. We're going to grab just a quick break, get some refills on coffee here. Hope you were with us for the Kenai conversation. If you have some thoughts or recipe ideas, maybe some fun sort of holiday family tradition stories you'd like to share, get with us for the second half of the program coming up. Give us a call at 283-8414. Again, 283-8414. We're going to take just a quick break here at the bottom of the hour. Be back with you in a few minutes. Stay with us. And thanks for staying with us this morning here on the Kenai Conversation. It's the holiday cooking program, all about food, fun, family, friends, all of those holiday things that hopefully we're all looking forward to as we move into the holiday season and through the holiday season, joined with Maya Wilson and Joe Spady, a couple of local food characters on the Central Peninsula, and so happy to have them with us. You know, of course, we want to try to, as much as we can, integrate local stuff into our holiday spreads. I do anyway. I'm sure you do as well. But I'm sort of running out, and I'm almost embarrassed to say this. I feel like I'm sort of running out of ideas for just, taking a frozen fillet of salmon out of the freezer and doing something with it. I've got my standbys and stuff that I'm happy to eat all day, every day, really. But in terms of trying things new or maybe fitting things in with a theme of other parts of a meal, I feel like I'm coming up a little bit short recently. And maybe you guys have some ideas of what to do with some of those frozen fillets that hopefully a lot of us have in our freezers right now. Anything off the top of our heads?
There's something creative.
That's the problem. There's almost too many ways to do it. It's so adaptable and takes so many things so well.
I think I grew up eating nothing. Almost everything, all of our salmon came off the grill, which we always had a ton, which was great growing up here. But I think one of the cool things when I lived in New York is really where I fell in love with a variety of salmon preparations. The quality wasn't as great as here, but the fact that they were able to kind of make up a little bit with their preparation, like a really good, like hot seared salmon that's like cooked to a perfect medium rare. Mm-hmm. Things like that were things I hadn't grown up with, like getting purely from the heat of the pan, all of those layers to like get super crisp on the top are so crazy good. As well as just making like good, like, cold smoked salmon, or just even a cured salmon like a gravlax or things like that. That's something that I was just talking to a friend about it. I just need to pull a fillet out of the freezer and just get it into my cure and get that freezing. I would love to have that. That'd be a great Christmas morning treat.
Yeah.
I think for like a big group, if you're cooking for the holidays and you have family around, a big side of, well, if you have king salmon, a big side of king salmon. In my cookbook, I have a recipe for a slow roasted side of king. And it's great for family events or having people over. And you just slow roast the whole thing so the fat kind of melts in there and it doesn't get overcooked or dried out. And it's nice and medium rare. And then do a nice, like a yogurt dill cucumber sauce, something fresh, something that lemony and that lifts it. And it's beautiful, and it feels very special occasion.
And then that's something that that guests can just sort of, a forkful at a time almost. You can lay that out and right, slice it up. And
yeah, you put the whole thing out on the table, and it's really pretty and impressive, and then everyone can kind of dig into it and just slide it right off the skin and put it on their plate.
Yeah. Now, I have smoked salmon a variety of different ways, many of them quite Pinterest do-it-yourself style in a cardboard box with a with a hot plate and some coals and a little chief and in an actual smoke, all sorts of different ways to hot smoke salmon. I've never cold smoked salmon for gravlax. Have you done that? What's the process? Is that doable for the home cook? Do you need special stuff or just time?
No, I think time is really all. I'll be honest, I haven't either. Have you?
Yeah, doing a cure.
Yeah.
It just takes time.
So what do you cure salmon in? Because it's such a, typically when I think of a cure, there's the preservation aspect, but there's also the tenderizing aspect that you get sort of automatically. And salmon's such a delicate meat.
Right.
What are you getting out of that cure?
Well, you're definitely going to need your acids. You're going to need your vinegar, your citrus, and then you're going to need some herbs and spices and those kind of, like pickling spices almost.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Salt.
Right. Lots and lots of salt. And that's really your preservative.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's really your cure. But, I love salmon on a bagel, smoked salmon dip around the holidays, even a hot smoked salmon dip with, warm bread.
Yeah.
There's so many preparations you can do with a cured or a smoked salmon this time of year.
So with the cure, are you taking like a section of fillet, getting the skin off and get like you would like a normal brine, right, like anything else? And then for what, like a week or how long do you go?
It depends. Lots of recipes. A week.
Yeah, it really depends on the size of your salmon and what kind of salmon you're working with, how high the fat content is, how long it takes. So you really need to kind of break pieces off and try it and see if it's ready. But
As well as pressure.
Yeah.
Like if you're actually weighing it down, or I've seen people just put it in pressure, like sealers.
Okay. And because part of the idea is to get some of the moisture out. That's part of the preservative effect. And the salt does that. I hadn't thought about pressure being a part of that equation as well.
Yeah. And when you cure it, it tends to be a lot more moist than when you smoke it. And it kind of takes a lot of the moisture out of it.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with lox, it's going to be a wetter smoked salmon.
What I think of when I think of lox is the very thin slices that are very, you know, like electric red and really pop off of that otherwise ordinarily boring bagel.
Right. Yeah. Actually, we served some of that at the restaurant, and some Alaskans really thought that it was still raw, because they weren't accustomed to seeing a cured salmon versus their hot smoke.
Yeah, the cold factor is different, and it took me a while to get used to too, because I'm from the Midwest and we did not have salmon growing up. The only salmon dish that I can take home is your basic smoked salmon and cream cheese dip, which always a winner, but there's like so much other ways to go, guys. Anyway, that's my what was me salmon story. 283-8414 is the number if you'd like to get in on the conversation today. We're talking with Maya Wilson and Joe Spady all about holiday food, holiday cooking, family, friends, traditions, all those sorts of fun things here on the conversation. 283-8414. What are some other, again, just in the theme of trying to keep things local, and for myself, again, trying to branch out a little bit, because I have, you know, I have a stove full of stuff that I was like guaranteed has to be on the menu, but I keep wanting to branch out for other like local seafood things because we have such great access to so many. And Maya, I know that in a section of your cookbook, you have, you've devoted some time to seafood. What are some of your favorites, especially around this time of year, that maybe make for good entertaining or just make for a good part of the meal themselves?
I would say crab. Crab is a big special occasion. Like if you're going to fork out the money to do crab, do it at Christmas time and do some crab legs. My oldest son always asks for crab legs. And if it's not in the budget, then do something where you can use lump crab, like a crab pasta. You know, I love a Christmas fettuccine. So throw some crab on there. And then you don't have to have like this massive crab leg on the plate. You can just have a few little nibbles of crab. And that's a more affordable way to go.
Yeah. What do you have favorite maybe shellfish recipes?
No, I'm trying
to grow up with anything.
I think crab was really our main go-to. Crab and salmon were kind of the main things I grew up with. Yeah.
I haven't eaten a ton of crab. One of my favorite things about living in Alaska is you have on occasion the opportunity maybe to help clean someone's freezer out. And this happened to me one time. We were just, hey, let's clean the freezer out. In the freezer was umpteen pounds of king crab legs from Unalaska Dutch Harbor, from out that way.
What a shame.
Yeah, just terrible, right? And so we go through the process and we get all the crab meat out, and it was almost like, what do we do with this? And the thing that I came up with, and I really want to make this again because it turned out really well, and so I want to make it a second time and screw it up, was puff pastry, and you dock the puff pastry and you do a layer, this was cleaning out the fridge kind of thing. There was some Bloody Mary mix. So I had a little bit of Bloody Mary mixed down on the bottom, then the lump crab, and then Parmesan cheese. Bake that all off on puff pastry with a nice little edge around it, and a little bit of lemon on top, and that was just...
Sounds divine.
It was like this perfect... It went, as you would assume, wonderfully in the morning with Bloody Marys and a poached egg on top. Just fantastic, yeah. So that was my... I like that crab recipe. If anybody's paying attention,
right. I love like actually crab, both a crab and salmon cakes into Benedict's. That's one of my favorite breakfasts.
Into Benedict's. All right, tell me about Hollandaise. Is one of those things everybody loves. Benedict, it's fantastic. Hollandaise is not so difficult to pull off for a couple of people. If you're trying to do it for a group, what's a restaurant trick for pulling off Hollandaise in a group?
Throw it in the blender.
Blender's the key.
Yes, or a good food processor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, walk us through that recipe.
Okay. So you're going to separate out your egg yolks and you're going to throw them in the blender with some lemon juice and then steadily pour in, while it's running, your melted butter. And it will start to kind of emulsify and come together. I like to season mine with salt and like some Old Bay or some smoked paprika. and I'm giving away all my recipes. And yeah, and then it, and then just kind of keep it warm so it doesn't solidify on you.
And you can sort of rescue a hollandaise with a, you know, a splash, if it's, you know, sitting on the stove for a while, a splash of water to kind of wet it down a little bit, because they do tend to dry out. So almost no matter what you do, if you want that nice kind of thick coverage that you want when it's fresh and hot, that will tend to thicken up.
Right. Yeah. You can thin it back down with some water or more lemon juice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wanted to move in. We're getting towards the last little portion of the program. I wanted to ask about, you mentioned homemade eggnog, boozy eggnog. What are some other fun sort of holiday themed cocktails that you have developed or come up with? Does anybody have, is there anything specific that comes to mind just for the holidays? I mean, eggnog is sort of the classic, and there's a million riffs on that. Maybe we could start there. What are some different riffs on eggnog? Do you make your eggnog from scratch?
I do. We do.
That's,
we
make fascinating to me.
Yeah. And the alcohol cures the eggs. The eggs aren't cooked. So that's actually an important,
because I don't
factoid.
Know that I've ever had honest to goodness, real, fresh, homemade eggnog, so I'm sure that I'm missing something.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to bring you some freshly grated nutmeg, you know, the kind that you have to grate yourself.
Yes,
that is the way to go.
Yeah. Speaking of secret ingredients, that's one that every kitchen needs, I think.
Oh, 100%. 100%. But, and as far as alcohol is concerned, I like bourbon, I like some rum in there, and then I would say some Hennessy.
Cognac.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, and not all together.
No, all together.
That's what I was.
All three. Yeah.
I wondered if how do those things go together? Is it always best to you know, do a rum flavored eggnog or a bourbon flavored?
Is that a spiced rum or?
Yeah, like a dark spiced rum, like Kraken.
Yeah.
Like. But you know, like half a cup of each.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
In with your eggs.
Your holiday parties are fun. we are, again, I want to throw the numbers out, 283-8414. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, perhaps you have some favorite family recipes, 283-8414. When it comes to, like a punch, I don't have anything, I guess, big enough in my little cabin to make a punch in. Is that anything, maybe, Joe, that you've ever put together for one of your dinner parties? I would really like to try it, because I remember as a kid growing up, and sometimes you would have you'd show up at the parties and there'd be the giant punch bowl with the big scoops of ice cream and that sort of thing. I haven't had one of those in years, and I wonder if that's still a thing that people enjoy or have. For mealtimes. Have you ever made anything like that? Or
I honestly haven't for my parties. I love like a really like traditional like 90s wedding big punch bowl with like Sprite and sherbet melting in it. Like I love that.
Yeah.
Getting that nice and boozy would be lovely. Like I like.
What would go in that to make sort of an adult version? That would be something on the lighter side.
For sure. I mean, you could definitely go different routes. You could make it more herbal and add like gin or do different concepts with that to make it a little more complex than just like spiking it with like strawberry vodka or something very simple and kind of boring. But, or you could really even go different route and make it more complex and do like, maybe like a gin and a Moscato in there to really add more. I love making wine cocktails. It's one of my favorite things.
Ooh, so all right. I'm familiar with beer cocktails. Wine cocktails are something that I'm not too familiar with. How do you, where do you start with that to try to build a wine cocktail?
It really depends on what you're doing. Like I love like using like a really sharp white wine in like a bright, refreshing cocktail because it just gives it this interesting depth of flavor. Like in like a lemonade based, like with a Sauvignon Blanc in it is delicious. You could definitely make it more holiday and like add like more like rosemary or cranberries to that kind of cocktail, which would be delicious. I also love just like vodka, like a sweeter, like a Cosmo kind of martini. But if you use purely as your sweetener, a Moscato or something like that, I think just makes it so much stronger and even a much better cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something actually I didn't get a chance to say about Joe, is that he used to live in New York, and he has some major chops when it comes to like wines and cocktails, and he has served some really famous people, and so I wanted
have
to
you really?
Point that out.
Oh, come on, let's hear some dirt. Who's come across your bar?
I've working both in Manhattan and Hollywood, I definitely had a lot of big names going through. A lot of them were simple. I think one of my favorites, I was a maitre d' at the front door, and a guy came in, and I said, hi, and I recognized him. So my brain thought, oh, hi, how are you? And I was saying hello to him, and as I just glanced, and I asked, do you have a reservation today? And as I glanced at my screen, I looked at the next reservation was for Billy Joel. So that was one of my favorite moments of me just then doing, ha, this way, sir. Which he just sat on the patio smoking the entire time, which you weren't allowed to do, but we're like, who's going to tell Billy Joel to put out a cigarette? Who wants to do that? So it has been fun to be able to have some pretty big names come through.
That makes work interesting, right?
Yes, it does. And some good stories.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about, we've touched a little bit on desserts, kind of from the angle of how to use other ingredients that we don't always use specifically for desserts, but I'm terrible at pie crust, no matter how much I try. It's just, I'm not good at it. It always turns into either bad puff pastry dough or that then turns into bad biscuit dough, but it's never like pie dough. And I don't know if I'm not using like cold water or what exactly I'm doing wrong, but what are some secrets for a good homemade pie dough? Because as I understand it, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
Right. Yeah, you definitely have to keep your ingredients cold. That's a huge piece of it, is not letting those fats melt while you're working with the dough before it goes into the oven. The other thing is, I love a combination of lard and butter.
Oh, mm-hmm. I never thought about mixing different. What does that do when you mix different kinds of fats? They bring different properties, but.
Right. Then you get your nice flaky crust that you're really hoping for. And
okay. Yeah. Lard. Okay. That's the old school method. And that's why everything that I do turns into more like puff pastry, because I use butter for the only fat instead of. Okay. And what is the vodka trick? I've never understood the vodka trick. Does that have to do?
I don't use vodka in my doughs.
I don't have vodka in mine either. And some people I know use vinegar, which probably does the same thing.
Well, does it have something to do with keeping the gluten formation down as you're working that dough? Is that maybe part of it?
So it probably just helps evaporate and keeps it from getting too sticky.
And enhances that flakiness and that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. And when it comes to, is it always necessary, never necessary, or sometimes necessary to par bake?
Oh, it depends on the kind of pie you're making.
Yeah. What are the kind of guidelines for when to do that?
So if you're going to make, say, a cream pie, you're going to make your crust in advance and bake it all the way. A par bake, it probably are going to do, like with a pumpkin pie, you want to get your crust somewhat done, but not all the way done, because you're going to bake it quite a bit longer in the oven to get the filling done. You just want to make sure that you don't have raw pie crust on the bottom when your pie comes out of the oven.
Yeah.
So a little bit of par bake goes a long way.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's different, because it's you can't really cut into a pie and see if the bottom's done without sort of messing up the whole crust.
Right.
Yeah. Do pies make it on your menu quite often?
Yes.
And you use not just, you know, sort of traditional flour pastry crust. You've found you use all sorts of stuff. I think
a little bit. I mean, I'll be honest. Most of my crusts are.
Are they?
It comes down to my basic pie crust.
I feel like I've seen like cereal crusts, or maybe I'm making that
up. I have like worked in like Apple Jacks into my crust before, or I've just done one of my favorite, like, instead of using graham cracker, I found a saltine crust that I've used a few times, which I love. It really gives a
interesting,
really fun, a little more complex. I think just more saltiness than just a overwhelmingly sweet graham crust, which I loved.
Because that's still a very light, I mean, as a cracker, that's a very light mm-hmm. sort of substance. I think when I think about using crackers as something, it's always like to sort of thicken it. Or I've seen dressings that were cracker based, like oyster dressings that are cracker based, that are always so thick, but it works well as pie in a pie crust
as a pie crust.
Really?
It was great. Essentially like a graham cracker crust, mm-hmm. but instead I use saltines and.
What works best in a graham cracker crust? Because those are either, if you want to make that yourself, that's super easy to make. You just pound a bunch of graham crackers, and those are readily available to buy as is in the store. What are good fillings for that more that crumbly, loose kind of a crust? Is that more of your cream style filling, or?
It depends. You really do all sorts of things. One of the things I do, like a magic cookie pie, and it's essentially just a play on the magic cookie bars that I grew up eating with, like the sweet condensed milk and coconut and chocolate. And but I love using, that's one of the few things that I always, the graham cracker is an absolute must for that recipe, because it's just such an integral part of it. But I do like, when I use that, I always get my butter really browned so that it really gives, makes that crust just a level up than just your typical.
Yeah.
Right. For a graham cracker crust, I would definitely make like a cheesecake, and you can use a chocolate graham cracker.
Ooh,
you can use a ginger snap. Like, you don't have to stay in the whole like graham cracker realm necessarily.
Yeah. There are lots of cookies that could be crumbled.
Exactly. Yes. So many cookies to be crumbled. And, or if you're going to stick with graham crackers, do like a s'mores pie, you know, with a marshmallow layer and a chocolate layer and a Nutella layer. And that's, yeah, that's, now we're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are pies and desserts a part of the holiday table at your guys' typical festivities? Is that part of the equation?
Oh, yeah. Mom always makes some kind of fruit pie and usually pumpkin pies. And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Or a nice festive cheesecake, I think, is a good way to go for people who don't do a fruit pie or don't do pumpkin pie or pecan pie. Cheesecake's a nice option and fancy.
Yeah, well, so cheesecake is one of those that we, at least I tend to think of as one of those things that's difficult to do at home. You get that when you're out. That's like a specialty thing.
Right.
Is that, how do you do that at home? Is that not that difficult to put together, or is it kind of,
I think it's the water bath that intimidates people. Mm. I think that they get scared of, you know, putting their pie into water in the oven and that, but to prevent your cheesecake from drying out, it's important to have some moisture inside the oven.
Okay. Those are some of the sorts of like chef tricks that, you know, adding a pan of water to the oven to keep things moist that doesn't necessarily make it into the YouTube video for some of these things, or the, you know, back of the box directions for some of these things for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and I guess in just the last couple of minutes here, what's on the menu for this year? Have we thought that far ahead, or are you too busy at work to think about?
I can tell you what's on the menu for all the Christmas parties at Addy Camp.
Great.
I have no idea what I'm cooking at home.
Well, let's talk about that though little bit. What are some of the themes that popped out, or how do you go about establishing sort of a holiday menu?
Well, I like to do some things that are very seasonal and great for large groups and that feel very special. And so we do a braised short rib in red wine braise and a nice Parmesan polenta and caramelized carrots. Mm. And we have a pomegranate glazed chicken that we're doing with sage butter, and then a really nice wild mushroom pappardelle pasta in cream sauce and some eggnog panna cotta and some gingerbread pudding cake and just things that all read very holiday. And
there's a lot of warmth in all of those dishes.
Yes,
that eggnog panna cotta is to die for.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
Well, Joe, have you been thinking about putting anything together for yourself, or maybe as we're around the holidays, you have some gigs lined up where you're putting together some holiday type meals?
Yeah. Well, next weekend, right now I'm just kind of doing soft opening stuff at my new shop.
Mm-hmm.
Next weekend, I'll definitely have meatballs on the menu, and I think I'm just going to make a really good cornbread stuffing, or just a rich, heavy cornbread stuffing to go with those meatballs. Kind of just lean into the holidays as much as I can, as well as I'll do some good holiday baking. Some kind of bread pudding, probably some kind of pie. I need to go to the store and just see what really is shining ingredient-wise for me. And so I'm excited. Next weekend we're doing Ian McEwen. He is going to come read the A Christmas Carol in our
cool.
shop on next Friday. So,
and when's that?
This coming Friday, the 20th.
But what time?
At 6 o'clock. So,
6 o'clock.
And yes.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it should be a blast.
Yeah, and Ian's great.
He's so phenomenal.
He'll be able to pull that off magnificently.
Yes.
We're just about out of time here. I guess any parting thoughts from both of you as we round things out here? This has been a lot of fun, and my problem as we get to the bottom of the hour is I don't have something quick to round us out for the last minute. We could go all day talking about some of this stuff.
Yeah, my tips for holiday cooking would really be do what you know. And don't try to overcomplicate it with a bunch of new recipes you've never tried before, because inevitably you will feel like a failure on an an important day. And so do what you know, do what you're comfortable with. And those are most likely the things you do best. But also come visit us at Addy Camp for New Year's Eve. We're having a huge New Year's Eve gala with a very special menu and live music and dancing. And I would love for the community to come out.
Absolutely. And real quickly on the way out, on your blog or in your cookbook, any specific recipes for this type of year that you think would be real winners for folks to try out? Remembering that we don't want to get too far outside of our comfort zone for new stuff, but
definitely, I would say peruse the brunch and the breakfast section of my cookbook for some nice holiday kind of Christmas morning Swedish pancake idea, or go to the desserts and look for that s'mores pie I was just talking about. And yeah, and I'm going to pop it over to Joe.
Joe, at the Merck, there's stuff for sale all the time. Is there anything that you think would go particularly well for people's holiday projects that you keep on stock there?
Right now, I mean, I'll have lots of yummy local food that are great for Christmas presents. I have some amazing local honey from my friend Emma. Not only that, but I have honeycomb. On the weekends when I'm open, I have my dill pickles, which is a fun holiday buy, or even just gift cards, which is awesome for people to like buy seats for future supper clubs. Cool. It's such a fun community event.
So. Yeah, very cool. Well, lots of options out there. And again, thank you both so much for taking some time out of busy holiday schedules for both of you, I know, and joining us to talk a little bit about fun and food. And happy holidays to everyone who's out there. And again, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.